welcome to the first episode of Cooler Than Homework, a podcast where four friends get together and watch every Disney Channel original movie. I am Nicole Sweeney, and I am the co-founder of Snark Squad and co-host of Snark Squad Pod.
I am Matthew Gatos. I am the host of the podcast. I love it.
My name is Mendiness. I am co-founder of Snark Squad and also co-host of Snark Squad Pod.
And I'm Sari. I am mostly a science communicator on the podcast SciShow Tangents, but I also do media stuff sometimes.
So for our very first episode, we are discussing Under Wraps. There is some controversy as to what constitutes the first Disney Channel original movie. We are just going by the list on Wikipedia. Feel free to yell at us about this on Twitter if you are really passionate that we should have started with Northern Lights or whatever.
Big Northern Lights fans out there.
That'll be like the Patreon bonus episode.
Yeah.
So we're starting with Under Wraps, and we're going to start this episode where we intend to start every episode, which is by talking about this cast and where they are now.
Yeah, so that's going to be my little segment here. So I'm going to run down this cast list we have, which is just full of stars, and talk about who we've got in this movie and what they're up to now, other things that they've been in that maybe you would have seen. Our main character is Marshall, who is played by, and sorry for butchering some of these names, his name is Mario Yedidia. Actually, this was like the last thing he ever did, the main kid.
Oh, dear. He's, oh.
Yeah, he stopped acting. That sounded like he maybe died. He didn't.
Sound like the mummy got him at the end. That was it.
Spoiler for the end of the movie, he actually died.
Yeah.
But no, he is now a political coordinator and works with Unite Here in San Francisco, which apparently is a organization that represents workers through the U.S. and Canada that work in hotel, gaming, food service, and airport industries. And he's just like political organizer now. And yeah, he seems like a good dude based on his Twitter account.
The subheading of this this segment is going to be Matt evaluates these people's Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
Well, that's some of these people. It was hard to like find out a lot about them via like IMDb or Wikipedia, because if they only did like one or two movies and then stopped, they didn't have a lot of information. So I had to try and find the right version of them on Twitter. And that's unfortunately impossible for some of them. But for him, he's very out there. He's very public in his bio. It even says like former child star. So I'd say second billing, maybe not officially, but in my heart, is Gilbert. the best friend in the film, played by Adam Wiley, who is one of those actors who, if you Google him and see his face, you're just like, oh, it's that guy. He was the little kid in every TV show in the 90s. I think more recently, I say recently, this is like 15 years ago, he was on Gilmore Girls playing Brad, a guy who goes off and does Broadway stuff and is kind of a jerk about it on Gilmore Girls.
We have a whole tag on Snark Squad that's called That Guy from That Thing for basically any time you have a face that you're like, I know that guy from That Thing.
Yeah. He is that guy. He is definitely that guy. There is one actor who appeared in this film who unfortunately has passed since the film, and that's the actor who plays Mr. Kubot, and that's Ed Lauder. He died in 2013, but he's also a prolific actor, much like Adam Wiley. He was in Cujo, and I don't know why I pulled this as my second example, but he's also in Not Another Teen Movie.
Of course, classic.
Those two very similar classic films. Pulling double duty in this film is another name I'm going to butcher, which is Bill Fagerbach. He plays both Ted, the boyfriend of the mom, and he also plays Harold the mummy.
What?
Oh. Which,
yeah, he plays both those characters.
Weird. I guess it makes sense, sort of. But
that's why you never see them in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, and I noticed like the first time we saw Ted, the boyfriend, that he was like really tall. It's like, wow, that's a large dude.
But yeah, you might know him. He played Dauber on the show Coach in the 90s, but more famously, he's the voice of Patrick on SpongeBob.
Oh. No way. That's the thing that I know.
Yeah.
You mentioned all these things and it's like Gilmore Girls, I recognize the name but I never watched it, but SpongeBob. That's me.
We've also got Marshall's mom, who's played by Corinne Boer. She's still acting in a bunch of things that I am not as familiar with, but I know she was on Veronica Mars, correct, Nicole?
Yes, she is Veronica's deadbeat mom.
Oh. Yeah, I did not recognize her from This Alone, but I looked at her IMDb page and was like, oh, you've just been in a ton of things. Getting back on track of people who have leading somewhat normal lives now, Amy, also one of my favorite characters in this, played by Clara Bryant, is now a DUI and DWI attorney in Chamblee, Georgia.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah, she's in another DCOM movie later on that we'll get to, but she gave up acting at a certain point and is now an attorney.
I was going to put a pin in this and revisit this when we got to True Confessions, but which is the other Disney Channel original movie that she's been in. But that's going to be, who knows how long it's going to take us to get to that 2002 film.
Oh, so, God, that's a little ways off.
It's a ways off. When I looked her up, I was like, I know this face. And I realized she was in True Confessions. We'll have a lot to say when we get to that movie, but I had this moment of really intense realization that 14-year-old Nicole had a crush on her and didn't know. I was like, oh.
She's definitely crush worthy.
Things are making sense now. Clara Bryant was also on Buffy. She was one of the potentials in season 7. She's the one who has the terrible British accent.
Oh. I don't remember her face, but I remember that accent.
All right. So the last two people I want to mention that are, I think, my, again, two great characters in this film are Bruce and Leonard. Bruce is played by Ken Hudson Campbell, who you might just recognize. He's in Groundhog Day. He's the weird Santa in Home Alone. He's in Armageddon. Most recently, he plays a bear named Boomer in the animated film Wonder Park. So he's still out there doing it. Whereas Leonard, the little kid who stole my heart in this film, is played by Joshua Dennis, who only has one other credit, and it is from 2016, where he was a cinematographer on a film that doesn't look like it was ever actually released anywhere.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's what that cast is up to these days.
Joshua Dennis, if you're listening to this, we'd love to know what you're up to.
Still walking around with that rag?
Yeah. Send us your life updates. Now that we know what all of these people are doing with their lives, what they've done since 1997, Mari, what was this movie? What did we just watch?
I'm doing the synopsis, not because I am any good at this at all, but because that's the way the cookie crumbled. So here we go. We start this movie with a family gathered around the dinner table, and the little brother is scared of a potential monster, and his sister is making fun of him. His dad is basically yells at him to not be afraid anymore, because yelling at somebody who's afraid of something, especially a child, is always, really useful. Joke's on dad, though, because there is actually a monster and they get attacked. Joke's on us, because this is all a movie within a movie. So we are watching Marshall and Gilbert watch this scary movie. Here we quickly learn that Gilbert, his defining character thing is that he's a scaredy cat. He leaves the movie. He can't handle it and he leaves. And then Marshall just sits there and watches the rest of the movie. And I was immediately I want to know what the friend protocol is here. If you're with a friend in a movie and they're like, no man can't, and they bolt, do you sit and watch the rest of the movie by yourself?
It depends on the friend dynamic, I don't know. Who is this friend to me?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say if it's someone that I know and love and care about, instantly would get up, make sure that they're okay. If it was a bad first date or something, get out of there. I'm watching this dang movie and you can leave.
I think I probably would have not gone with him at first. I would have been sitting there assuming he might come back. Maybe he'll get his nerves back and he'll come back. So it would just be a series of me watching the movie and thinking yeah, he'll probably come back soon. And then just
1 hour later.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I guess he didn't come back. Well, that was a good movie.
All right, fair. I guess everybody would have left Gilbert by himself, like in the lobby.
Sorry, Gilbert. I also probably would have been Gilbert instead, actually. I would have been also scared as a child, so I would have gone with him.
Hard same. Maybe that's why I'm asking, is because I would have been alone in the lobby. Like, yeah. Is my friend ever coming? Okay, Marshall does not go and join him. We cut to them after the movie. On the walk home, the boys talk about Halloween and trick-or-treating. They pass by a creepy neighbor's house, and Gilbert admits that while he's supposed to deliver a creepy neighbor's paper every day, he's been doing that, but he actually hasn't collected payment for like 2 years. So Marshall is like, we're going to, you know, march on over there and demand payment. And the creepy neighbor answers the door and basically sicks his dog on these children. So that's cool. They run home in fear, as they should. Back at Marshall's house, we learn that his mom is dating a super nice dude named Ted, the actor who doubles as the mummy from later. And Marshall is like 0% about the super nice dude named Ted. Like, he doesn't want any part of it. Also, we see Marshall's room, and it's, I don't know if it reminded you guys of this, but it's like the super horror little kid version of Dawson's room from Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
Like, that was Dawson's room when he was a child, for sure.
But, like, even more so because this kid had things that Dawson could never afford. And I don't know where he gets the money for all this, but his mom does not question it.
Hmm. Well, his parents are divorced, so maybe dad, you know?
Dad just bought a life-size mummy to suck up to his kid.
We never see this dad, right? So I don't know. Maybe like dad has a lot of money and he just like sends him money, but you know, isn't really there. Thinks that he can just like send him money in lieu of parenting.
Yep. Yeah. That feels true.
Yeah. Canon. Done. Yeah.
I mean, you can't prove us wrong with the movie. Right. So there's nothing to prove us wrong in any canon. So we can just say that is true.
Later at school, the third in our trio of friends, a girl named Amy, shares the news that the creepy neighbor has actually died. Creepy neighbor used to work at a museum, and now Amy's mom is clearing out his house and trying to sell the house. The kids cook up a plan to break into creepy neighbor's now empty house and check it out for themselves. Once they're there that night in the basement, they find that the creepy neighbor had a sarcophagus? And because of like the moon and Halloween magic, the mummy inside the sarcophagus gets reanimated. They are obviously very scared of the mummy at first, but then he uses a toilet and is fascinated by like a digital watch. So they decide that the mummy is probably pretty all right. And they're going to name him Harold and keep him around for basically the rest of this movie. The kids visit their horror shop friend who does some like light mummy research and figures out that they need to get Harold back into his coffin before midnight on Halloween. Or if not, he's just going to, you know, be dust, I guess. I don't know. He's going to cease to exist. The problem is that creepy neighbor isn't actually dead. He faked his own death and stole back the sarcophagus. This was all a like money making plot. So for the rest of the movie, the kids have to keep Harold hidden. They have to dodge creepy neighbor's henchmen. They have to figure out a way to put Harold back into his coffin. And also, I don't know, Harold has a mummy girlfriend. The creepy neighbor manages to get Harold back, but the kids break him free, return him to the museum where he gets to see his mummy girlfriend again for a hot second. Everybody says very emotional goodbyes. And after Harold is gone, Marshall undossens his room. He decides to give super nice guy Ted a chance. And we're kind of led to believe he might have feelings for Amy, but they're kids. So we end this movie with the three of the kids just going back to see another scary movie. And that's the end of that.
Okay, so before we talk about this movie, we have to do a nostalgia factor check. Had you watched this movie before sitting down to watch it for this podcast?
No, I don't think so. I watched a lot of DCOMs as a kid, but going into this one, I think I had heard of it, but I was waiting for that moment of like nostalgia to pop up and for me to be like, oh, right, this scene. But that never happened. So I'm pretty sure I have never seen this movie.
Yeah, same. I recognized like the visual, like the movie poster of it. Like, I feel like I saw commercials about it on Disney Channel or something like that. It felt similar in that way, but I'm almost certain I never watched this movie. Any nostalgia that I got from the movie was from, like, clothes and flannel and, I don't know, the little kids being little kids. But this was my first time watching it.
Same on pretty much all counts. Like, definitely had seen images of the movie as a kid. Like, I don't know, probably, definitely is too strong. But I also am pretty sure I never actually watched this movie all the way through, which surprised me because I thought I had seen most of these, but had not seen this one. Sari, what about you?
Definitely no. So for context, I have not seen a single DCOM and I know nothing about any of them really, with the exception of a couple that got very big, to the extent that when I started watching this, I was like, okay, is this going to be like Scooby-Doo where the mummy is going to be a man in a mask? Like, was he the mummy the whole time? Or do these movies get supernatural? I just never watched the Disney Channel as a kid, so I have no context for any of these actors or characters or franchises, and this podcast is going to be a wild ride.
I would say, like, surprisingly supernatural is like a good tagline for most of these movies. Definitely not okay. All of them, but there's a number of them that you're like, oh, that's okay. That is true in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's just like, I have no expectations. It was like, okay, there's magic. There's moonlight magic. And this mummy is coming to life. And I'm along for this ride. And yep. Just gonna have a good time.
This is also something that we typically do when we're doing recaps on Snark Squad. We try to have somebody who we refer to as a Snow, as in you know nothing, Jon Snow. So that's a big part of why Sari's here.
Sari, the Snow. Eternal Snow.
Yeah. Snow.
I am happy. I'm usually, my brand is the person who knows all the things, and so this is refreshing. This is so fun. I get to just goof around, ask questions.
So did you guys like this movie? How did you feel about it? I mean did you like it? Is maybe a, I don't, this is like, this is also our brand, this is where we tend to start. Did you like this movie?
I enjoyed it. I found some of the writing and some of the jokes genuinely funny and enjoyable. Mostly Gilbert's lines. I feel like he had like a joke wisdom beyond his years, like clearly like a 40-year-old man was writing his jokes for him. And then I also really liked, for similar reasons, the character of Amy, because she was so clearly like smarter and more mature than her friends.
She was also shockingly scandalous for the Disney Channel. Like, I didn't know about that. She made a couple jokes that I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Disney Channel.
Yeah, talking about celibacy and how, like, basically saying Gilbert's gonna like be celibate forever.
That was one of the questions I had, is like, is this normal at Disney Channel? Are these things that would have just gone over my head as a kid? Probably, maybe. Who knows?
I think that's what they're constructed to do, is like, they're there to be right on that cusp of like what a 12-year-old might think is dirty, but they also don't go too far, so that way like the 6-year-olds aren't necessarily going to be asking their mom, what does celibacy mean? They might just like take it at face value, as what the movie presents it. So I think that is maybe a common thing throughout DCOMs, of like just barely pushing the envelope a little bit, but never to any, like, I think this might be the most extreme example.
Well, I'm curious now, like, I'm curious if this feels extreme because we never saw this one and we're coming back as adults, or if like we're gonna watch the rest of it and be like, oh my god, so much went over our heads.
Yeah, like, I'm thinking the latter, just because I do recall some jokes like slightly sexual or like referencing like below the belt humor, I guess is the nicest way to word it, in a way that I think looking at it now, we'll be shaking our heads a little bit more than we were as kids.
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of movies that I can think of that are built on some things that I'm like, oh, that'll be interesting when we get to that movie, where the whole movie is going to read real different in 2019.
Yep. I think we have the same movie in mind, but to to save Sari's like brand of not knowing what these things
are
about.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You're laughing ominously and it's like, which one do I have to guess is the bad movie to watch in 2019?
Yeah, gender plays a big role in a handful of these movies.
One thing that I did like about this movie is how it was self-aware of the ways in which you have to, I don't know, craft a plot around kids having an adventure. Like when Bruce was invading the warehouse with them, he was like, I gotta get some friends my own age. And that was like genuinely very funny to me. I'm like, yeah, what are you doing with your hearse full of Halloween things, running around with kids and beating mobsters or tax evaders over the head? I don't know.
I also, surprisingly, I found this enjoyable. I liked the three kid actors at like the center of this. I thought it had like funny lines, but also I was a little bored. And I feel like that was mostly because like this movie is not for me. And there were moments that I would like tune back in and like laugh and like, oh, look at the way they did that trope. Like it was fine. I'm not, it was a better than I expected movie, but also I was a little bored sometimes. That was my general experience.
I was super bored for a lot of this movie. I will agree that there were definitely quite a few moments where like it's like something funny was happening. I think for me, my experience of watching these, my takeaway from this first experience is that the nostalgia is going to be a determining factor in whether or not I like the experience of watching it now, you know? So the fact that I wasn't familiar with this movie and didn't have that necessarily to hold on to, it was just like, okay, this is a movie for children. I am not a child. I am quite bored. But that'll be an interesting part of this project. Looking ahead at the next few movies, the next one I think is the only other one that I haven't seen. And then it's a whole string of movies that I have seen. So fun.
That's a wild like brain thing to be like, this is a movie I have not seen. Brain is bored. Yes. This is a movie I have already seen. The pieces of this movie are already in my brain, but this one I want.
Yes. I think that, I'm so excited.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, though, because that's how I feel about, like, I was not as bored as you guys. I think there was one chunk where I was a little bored, and it's like when they gave the mummy the majority of the lines in a scene, and he can't speak. Uh-huh. And I'm like, why is this happening, and why is it happening for so long? But, like, on that topic of, like, nostalgia for something you've already watched, I am very much that way with a lot of like 90s sitcoms, where I can go back and rewatch like any episode of Roseanne, Boy Meets World, Full House, any of these shows that I have seen every episode 10 times. I love it because of that, and I can go back and watch it and enjoy every episode. But if I go back and try to watch like a random episode of Step by Step or Family Matters, things that I didn't keep up with as much when I was younger, those seem very like dull or cliche or cheesy in many of the same ways that I'm sure other people look at Boy Meets World and Full House as cheesy or boring. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that because those are my babies. I love them.
Right. You have the emotional hook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, because I wasn't bored also barely at all. And maybe my emotional hook was just like orienting myself in the DCOM universe, like coming from a complete blind spot and then being plunged all of a sudden into like children and mummies and wacky goofs and skateboarding mummies and walking through a hospital, physical humor, just like figuring out what the possibilities in one of these movies is was entertaining for me. I don't know if it'll hold up. I don't know if I'll start getting bored as we move on to later movies where you guys all have really strong nostalgic connections to them and I don't. I was thinking about that as I was watching, because I was like, this is a lot more fun than I expected. Like, I'm having a good time goofing around. And like the writing was better than I expected. My other maybe hypothesis is that I watch cartoons still as an adult and media geared towards children sometimes. So like Steven Universe and She-Ra, and they're all, a lot of these cartoons have big adult audiences, but they are still written for kids. So maybe like even the media that I consume now as an adult is still sometimes more childish. So it's easier for me to slip back into, okay, I'm just going to enjoy this thing. I'm not going to worry about plot twists. I'm not going to worry about, I'm not here to be surprised or amazed or want a dramatic villain character built up. I'm just here for the one-liners about your blanket that's a rag.
Which is also interesting to me because it seems like the other sort of way this can go too is that after watching more of these movies and like getting more acclimated to like watching children's media again, which because I don't watch a ton of children's media outside of this. I talked about it on pretty much every Snark Squad pod episode where I had to consume a piece of children's media. This was a discussion point for me. But, you know, if we, as we start to watch more of these, sort of the other side of this is that even the ones that aren't nostalgic will at least be like, I'll be more, I don't know. Yeah. Having the frame of reference that you're describing from consuming a lot of media that is intended for children.
Okay, I want to come back around to this because now hearing you guys talk, I also think that my experience of this movie, well, you know, Nicole and I do the Snark Squad pod thing week after week where our whole jam is like piece of media talking about it in depth for an hour. And so I sat in front of this movie with like my notes and like, okay, I'm gonna like dissect this movie.
Which also as like behind the scenes thing, you watched it first and you were like deciding how we were gonna do this too.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that that is like not the correct way to watch this movie. Spoiler alert. I think we all need to do the Sari probably and just like sit down and enjoy and see what happens. And it's going to be like flip or like switching from one gear to another, I think, for some of the other stuff that I consume media for, and to just like, hey, this is like a silly, funny, maybe sometimes bad, maybe sometimes good kind of thing we're doing, but not necessarily like sit down with a pencil and a paper for notes.
Yeah, I sat down with tacos and was like, this is like me as a kid just eating dinner in front of the TV watching whatever's on. So that's what I recommend.
These are the pro
recreating
tips. Yeah.
From now on, if we have to do the Sari, we all have to get tacos before we watch these.
Yeah. Tacos. I'll text you all what I'm eating. We can all get like kids' cuisines or something too, like a TV dinner.
Have a nice control experiment.
Yeah.
pairs nicely with a
Capri Sun pouch. And
what's the snack of the episode?
Ooh. Fruit roll-ups.
I think a good snack to go along with this one is actually, like you guys are taking notes. Most of my notes were just like weird things I liked about this movie or weird questions that came up. Mm-hmm. But one of the notes that I wrote down had to do with a snack because at one point Amy is wearing a shirt in this movie that I really think we all need at some point to celebrate like the anniversary of this podcast in the future. She has a shirt on that is like a generic Oreo shirt that has like a picture of two Oreos and just says chocolate cream cookies. And it doesn't say like, I love chocolate cream cookies. It doesn't say buy chocolate cream cookies. It just says chocolate cream cookies. And there's two pictures of like cartoon Oreos. And I'm like, what?
Yes.
I paused the movie and Googled to see if this was a thing, and I couldn't find the shirt anywhere online. So I
so
don't know
if
so.
Make this shirt.
Make it.
Yes.
A whole line of like generic fruit or generic snacks on t-shirts with just the generic name of the t-shirt, and that's it.
Yes.
I love it.
I would wear that shirt.
Amazing.
My other snack contribution is also via Amy. I don't know why I took this note, but they're at the very beginning of the movie, they're at lunch and they're talking about like a dead neighbor and like breaking into this house, and Amy keeps pausing to ask everybody if she can have their peaches, and just like, can I have your peaches, can I have your peaches, and finally Marshall is like, just eat all of the peaches. Just have all the peaches. I don't even know why you want these. They're so hard. And she says, if you just suck on them for a while, then they're okay.
Oh.
I was like, okay. Why is this here in this scene? I don't know, but fine. Okay, peaches.
I feel like Amy has a whole life outside of the movie that we don't get to see. Because at one point, they're like standing by the lockers talking about everything that's going on in their lives. And this like kid comes up and is trying to like ask her out. And we don't learn anything else about him other like outside of that scene. And he walks away and she just like says to her friends like, oh, yeah, I think he has a crush on me, whatever. And we're like,
it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And it's like, wait, but why? Who is that person? Like, what is your life, Amy?
Yes.
I also want to know more about Gilbert's mom. Like, she's just
Esmeralda.
That was just the name that she chose for that day. I don't know. I just wanted to mention it as far as like characters with a rich life outside of the movie.
If anyone had backstory, it was her.
Yeah.
She collects dolls. She takes the dolls to the movie. She sometimes buys her dolls popcorn.
Once? She did that once. He makes that very clear. She only did that once.
But that's a whole movie on its own is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I just want to pan over when they're at the movie at the end. Like, I just want to pan over two rows over and there's Gilbert's mom with her dolls. Yes. I wanted to ask you guys, when this movie started, and since none of us had seen it previously, we didn't know that it was necessarily a movie within a movie. Did you think the beginning of this movie was way too scary for the Disney Channel?
Yes.
Yeah,
it was terrifying.
Yeah, all the camera work. Like, yes. Yeah. Yes, I was like, this is spooky.
It felt like a like traditional bad horror movie. Like there was a knife and broken glass and a big scary monster.
Yeah.
And the thing, what's the thing called in the sink?
Warthead.
No, the what do you call the thing that you turn on in the
garbage
in the,
disposal?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And the garbage disposal, like that was, that's scary on its own. Like if you get stuck somehow with, in a garbage disposal, but there was a knife and broken glass. It was like they were layering like how creepy this thing was at the beginning. So I was immediately like, no thanks.
And it wasn't shot like a kid's thing. It was shot like a traditional horror movie. And it was like, it was genuinely terrifying. And I'm like, this movie is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had similar like scared feelings because there's a, spoiler whatever, death in Orphan Black where someone dies because of a garbage disposal and when his head was being pushed down towards the knife in the garbage disposal, I had like a visceral no reaction to this and like, what did I get myself into? These are Disney movies. I thought this is gonna be a fun podcast. I'm eating tacos, like.
Well, this transitions us nicely into the theme of the episode, if you will. I don't know. I feel like maybe we should come up with a better thing for it than the theme of the episode, but here we are. Because this is a movie that begins with this horror movie, and then, and you know, we have the character of Gilbert, whose defining character trait is being afraid of things. What are some other things that scared you as a kid?
I mean, I think I, like said earlier, I think I might have been Gilbert a little bit. Like, I don't think I was at such a level. I don't think I was quite at his level of scared of everything being my character trait, but I remember specifically being taken out of the theater during Jurassic Park because the T-Rex was too scary. And I think I was definitely the kid of, hey, let's go break into that abandoned house. I'd be the kid being like, no, you know what? I'm good. I am going to stay home. I don't want to do that. My mom said no.
I think I was similarly scared in that way, where I was scared of breaking rules, but I was not scared of horror tropes in general. So I, like, my grandpa inundated me with B horror movies. And so, like, fake blood gushing out of places or like people getting their limbs cut off was very normal for me, or normalized to a scary amount when I was so young. But things that definitely scared me were like very irrational fears, so like that I would slip through the bars at the mall and fall from a big height when everything else was very safe, or that my house would burn down because for some reason people always asked like, what is the thing that you would save during a fire? And then in my mind that would build up to an anxiety of, is my house going to burn down at some point in my life? And like, what will I save? I don't know. And I've got to like have contingency plans for all these things.
I am still currently in 2019 a scaredy cat. Like, I want to be the Amy. I am 100% the Gilbert. That is my life. That was me as a child. So I was scared of everything. Really, you know, grew up in a like overprotective, like we weren't allowed to do a lot of things. So I was just scared because I didn't know, like I didn't ever get exposed to much of anything. So scary things like horror tropes definitely got to me, but also like other things like Sari's mentioning. So my reoccurring stress dream during the time that I was like in elementary school was that Batman would show up at my house and take me away from my mommy. Every night, just me and Batman taking me away from my mommy.
Sorry, Batman's a good guy.
I was scared of him for some reason, and that's the way that went. So yes, I also still some holdovers from when I was a kid, like any sort of like being buried alive. Hated it as a kid.
Are you really still afraid of Batman?
I'm okay with Batman now. When you said it, there was like a shiver down my spine, and I'm like, oh, I'm apparently afraid of that too.
Wait, Batman or being buried alive?
The buried alive one, not the Batman one. Me and Batman are cool.
Yeah, I am probably more afraid of things now as an adult than I was as a kid. So I had like the opposite upbringing to you in that it was like lawless. I don't know. My mom had a very strict upbringing. And so she was like, I am not going to be my fucking parents. And was very, you know, you can do whatever. And I also had an older brother. And so I was probably afraid of more things, but spent so much time like posturing my way out of fear, you know what I mean? Like, because it was like I would have gotten laughed at or made fun of by my older brother if I presented fear. And so I spent so much time and energy like not presenting fear that I became desensitized. And just, you know, like we watched scary movies and stuff when I was pretty young. So I had enough exposure to a lot of that kind of stuff. Honestly, most of the fears that I remember having as a kid were like big existential fears. Like I remember being maybe 7 years old and driving somewhere with my mom, and I was sitting in the front seat, and like I looked over at her and I had this thought that what if what I was seeing and hearing wasn't real? Sitting in the car and being like, and like I'll never know, like what if she's really, and like I was conjuring, you know, just like really terrible images of like maybe she's actually this, and like you know, she doesn't really love me because she's not real, and like none of this is really real. So like, and like my nightmares are basically versions of like everything that you believe about the world is wrong and a lie, and like you can't trust your senses. So these were my fears as a child.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, was it like life is a simulation?
Yes,
or like
sort of. So, I mean, like I definitely didn't have like that language as a 7 year old, but that's basically the crux of it. Was it like my life was actually sort of some sort of like simulation concocted by evil creatures of some
Batman?
Sort.
Batman?
Yeah. Possibly Batman.
Very different from that. That reminded me of another one of my fears that is so hyper specific, where like I was a very strong swimmer. I'm not afraid of real life drowning or anything, but drowning in video games was the scariest thing in the world to me for some reason. Like in Sonic games and Mario 64.
Because Sonic's the worst.
The drowning music that surrounds you and it like speeds up and you know your character's dying. That was the worst thing. I think one time that happened and I started crying because it was like, I felt so bad that I let my character die and it was so scary. Huh. But real life, fine. I was fine swimming. So very different in simulations. I'm scared.
I feel like my childhood fears were pretty similar to yours, Sari, where I was okay with like watching horror movies and stuff like that as a kid. I was not ever afraid of like Freddy Krueger or Jason coming to get me, but like the dark, people breaking into my house and kidnapping me, storms, like these are the things that freaked me out as a kid, like those really realistic, uncontrollable things.
The dark. I am still low-key afraid of the dark. I do not like to be in a pitch black room. I'm not into it. I have like a little eye mask that I'll sleep with, and so they're like, it's actually like pitch black inside like my eyes, but at any time I can remove the eye mask and see things, and like that is still important to me.
I don't believe anybody who says that they enjoy being in the pitch dark. Like, that seems fake to me, but sure.
Pro tip for not something to not do if you don't want to enhance your fear of the dark. When I was a kid, this is what to avoid. When I was a kid, I had like a cardboard cutout in my room.
Ooh.
And
oh, no.
I made the mistake of, when I first got that cardboard cutout, of putting it in front of the window. I thought it'd be funny for like people outside driving by to be able to see. But the way that works is, when you wake up in the middle of the night, it looks like a grown man is standing in your room. And then you freak out and run to your mom's room. So don't do that. If you have a cardboard cutout, don't put it by a window.
Matt, was it a life-size cardboard cutout of yourself?
No, it was of Ricky Rudd, a NASCAR driver.
And now we are nearing the end of this first episode of this podcast. With pro tips in mind, after watching this children's movie, it's important that we discuss the lessons that we learned from this children's media. Matt, what would you like to share with the class today?
The lesson I gleaned from this movie was, if two people like each other enough, they should definitely be married. Because that's what Marshall teaches us at the very end of the film, is like, he asks his mom, do you love Ted? And she's like, yeah, I think so. And he's like, you should be married.
Yep, that's how it works.
Great.
And then he immediately is like, now I have to court Amy. This is how life works. I saw two mummies fall in love. Now everyone must be in love.
Now kiss.
Yeah, kiss everyone.
My lesson came really early on in the movie. Gilbert is trying to tell Marshall, like, listen, you like scary movies. I'm just not like that. Like, I just am a scaredy cat. It is what it is. And Marshall wants Gilbert to learn the lesson about being brave. But Gilbert very astutely argues back that he would like to learn his lesson from the comfort of his own home. And they don't listen to Gilbert. Nobody listens to Gilbert. And so they have this whole adventure, kidnapping creepy old people and stuff. But I feel like things would have been pretty chill if people had just listened to Gilbert. So I would like to impart this knowledge with all of you that, yeah, you know, maybe you can face your fears or whatever, but mostly try to do that from the comfort of your own home.
I think my biggest lesson that I learned is that everyone needs to find their own Halloween, because this is the perfect setting for this movie, where Harold the Mummy could just walk around in the world and exist and go on all his antics, and no one questioned him. And if it happened during any other time of the year, everyone would have been like, what the heck? There's this mummy walking around. But really, everyone was so kind to him. He got hit on at a party in kind of an uncomfortable way. A kid said rude things to him, and his mom was like, be nice to the man. So, but this was the time of year where he really thrived. So just find the time of year where you thrive, and then go out into the world and do good things. Find love. Make friends. Be less lonely.
That was a really beautiful
that was
lesson
really good
that you learned. Yeah. My lesson is less beautiful, but it's that tax evasion is for evil people. Only evil people do tax evasion. Because we are making our way through these movies in order, we know you too can go look at the Wikipedia list and find out what we're watching next. But Sari, who knows nothing, as we end this episode, Sari is going to guess what the next movie is about based on only the title. So the next movie that we are watching is You Lucky Dog, a 1998 Disney Channel original movie. Sari, what do you think this movie is about?
Oh. You Lucky Dog. Okay, well, given that my only experience is Under Wraps, which is pretty straightforward, Wraps, Mummy. You Lucky Dog, there's gonna be a dog very prominently in the movie. It's going to be a stray, maybe, that is adopted to a loving family. It might be, I never watched any of the Air Bud movies, but that's like what I'm picturing in my head. Like a small boy, brown hair, very lonely, plays baseball. Then this dog comes into his life. He learns responsibility. He learns friendship. He learns that he has the confidence to succeed. And then, like, the dog goes in during one of his baseball games when he's crying and, like, inspires him to catch the fly ball that wins them the game. And maybe continuously throughout the movie, now that he has this dog best friend, because of course it's a boy and a dog, he'll have a girl sidekick, but like the boy has to have the dog. He has good luck. So that's why you lucky dog is part of it. So he maybe he's a down on his luck kid and just very unpopular. And then he becomes very popular because, of course, dogs make you popular. That's my guess.
I want to watch that movie. Yeah, I don't know if that's next week's movie, but I want it to be. Like, I want to watch that movie.
Well, join us next time and find out if that's actually what You Lucky Dog is about. Thank you for listening to this first episode of Cooler Than Homework. We will have a post dedicated to this episode on StarkSquad.com that you can comment on, or you can find us all on Twitter. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name Is Maridis.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
Thank you to Stefan Chin for the theme music that is playing us out right now. And we will see you again next time.